Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Cale Copeland, and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thank you for being here. This is episode number 14, and today I'll be speaking with Paul Underhill. He's a remarkable person with a fascinating story, and I feel he has a really unique insight into health that I'm excited to pick his brain about. Now, before he joins us, if you have any questions or you require assistance, you can reach us here at Victoria Family Chiropractic at any time. Our phone number is 250-592-5553, or you can visit us online at www.vfchiro.com. That's V as in Victoria, F as in family. So a little about Paul. So Paul Underhill was in his late 20s when he began looking at every possible way to extend his life. And that's because at 6 months of age, he was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. That's a genetic disease that affects mostly the lungs. While most people with cystic fibrosis often don't see their 30th birthday, Paul was determined not to become another statistic. So to keep his body healthy, he sought to create a high protein, a gluten, lactose, and soy-free beverage free of artificial ingredients and low in sugar. He knew the beverage had to taste good, and after 6 months of rigorous testing recipes in his kitchen, the prototype for what would become the very successful Rumble Super Shake was born. So realizing he was onto something big, Paul brought together a small team to develop the brand, eventually landing on the Dragon's Den, where they pitched Rumble successfully. After nearly dying at age 40, Paul underwent a double lung transplant 7 years ago that has profoundly changed his life. Today, the success of Rumble has become his platform as both an advocate for cystic fibrosis and the need for more organ donors. It's also spurred the creation of a nonprofit 1% for Hunger. For more information about Rumble, please visit www.drinkrumble.com, or to check your status as an organ donor, please go to www.transplant.bc.ca. So, Paul, thanks for being here and welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Cale. I'm happy to have to be here.
Yeah, that's great. I know a little bit about you, but I guess my first question was, I mean, I don't know if people are familiar with Rumble, but it's a pretty popular beverage, and it's basically in any grocery store, any health food store, it's all over North America. But I guess my question is, so how did this all come about?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, a good starting point. And it came about, as you suggest in the intro there, you know, I do have cystic fibrosis, which is a genetic condition, and where it didn't, you know, I always say it didn't really bother me in my childhood and teenage years, although it did, you know, obviously impact my health. It wasn't something that was greatly bothersome to me. Mm-hmm. But in my 20s, it really took its toll. And you're always fighting to maintain your weight because your metabolism is so high with CF. And you also need quality. This is something that I learned, quality nutrition as opposed to just eating everything under the sun.
Okay.
Which is what I did for promote my teens, you know, get away with murder. Like most of us when we were young, you can sort of eat and drink with fewer consequences than when you're older. And
right.
When I got older, I really started to notice the impact that eating poorly had on me. And I'll be honest, I was a bit of a junk food addict, but I certainly, you know, wasn't eating healthy. And I started noticing the trends towards when I would have high-carb meals or meals that just weren't well thought out. And the contrast to how when I ate a little more healthily, more vegetables, more greens, a little bit higher proportion of protein, I wouldn't get so tired, I wouldn't get so fatigued, and then actually my chest symptoms would be better.
Wow.
So that was the sort of first clue that I had that I had to start paying attention. We did have also you know, dietitians that would tell you, because health and weight are closely linked with CF, you do want to be as close to normal weight as possible. Most of them with CF, as I call it, cystic fibrosis, are underweight. And so the primary emphasis they have is indeed eat ice cream, pizza, whatever is going to keep your weight up.
Okay.
But as I say, that, you know, they didn't really, at least, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they wouldn't discriminate against things that are pro-inflammatory, things that would, you know, contribute to inflammation, and things that were anti-inflammatory. So that really started me on a path of research to find out what foods and what you know, what type of nutrition I would most benefit by in theory, and then applying that to real life and seeing what worked out and what didn't.
Wow. I guess, so my question was, so you developed, like, it wasn't Rumble yet. You were just doing something for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. At first, I developed the shake using all the ingredients that I wanted to use, having the right proportion. And when I say that, I mean it's balanced. It was a balanced ratio of protein to healthy fats to carbs with a bit of fiber in there. And I was happy with the shake. But when I got sicker, it really started to be even a burden just to take the time to make that shake. And it was energy output that I was like, oh, you know what, I got to go just get the closest approximation to this at like the here in Lifestyles, you know, or whatever health food store was available to me. I went to all of them. And what I would ask is, what do you guys have that's all natural and nutritionally balanced and ready to drink? Those are the three simple things I was looking for.
Right.
And my answer, to my surprise, was like, nothing. We have nothing really close. There's all kinds of powders, but some of which are better than others. I'd been using some, actually. I was using a well-known plant-based one, but I was getting indigestion from that. Subsequently learned also that it has high levels of some heavy metals in there, but the primary problem at the time was simply the indigestion I was having, and I went to a naturopath, and she was pointing out, she's like, well, look, plant-based proteins are great for some reasons, for some people, for instance, they're great, you know, for people with kidney disease, but in actual fact, you need to have you need to have some dairy proteins, even if I had to avoid lactose.
That was a
clue to me, you know, so I, being lactose sensitive, I wasn't using that at the time, but I switched over to like a whey protein isolate in my shake, and later on added some more complex whey proteins, and sure enough, my health improved, my digestion improved, so that was a key factor for me. But back to the, you know, going to the health visitors, yeah, they simply didn't have it. And to this day, you know, I still, even though there's lots of players in the sort of what I call portable protein space, hardly any in North America are what I would call nutritionally balanced. And I would argue that, in fact, none of them are, because we were the first ones to have, but what would become Rumble has organic flaxseed oil in there for omega-3 content.
Yeah.
And omega-3, of course, are critical to health. You know, they are anti-inflammatory, but they're also something your body can't make on its own. So long story short, is that, you know, that answer that I got at the health food stores was the impetus for, you know, meeting with a friend and saying, you know, I think we should try to get something going commercially here. You know, who knows if it'll make money or not, but as a service to those who are looking for it, like me, and hopefully it'll be something that could be a successful business. And that was the sort of origin of what would later become Rumble.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, I guess what our listeners don't know, and I knew a little bit about you. I mean, so I guess the part that I find fascinating is that you found that when you weren't consuming what you'd call quality food, that you noticed that your lung functioning was actually decreasing.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, it happens over time with CF. You get repeated infections, and it's kind of like having repeated bad chest colds, or if you think of having you know, a bad chest, it's like influenza, you know, after the fatigue disappears and you're still left with that nasty cough.
Yeah.
That's what it's like living with CF. So you're, and what I would notice is, you know, I have a bunch of, say, you know, regular cereal. When I say regular, I mean, it's just like your standard sweetened cereal in the morning with milk or whatever. And then the chest would be more productive. There'd be more phlegm there, and I just feel tired. And I was talking to my doctor, and like, you know, it's often the case with CF that you do have fatigue, and you know, so that napping an hour or two after breakfast, that's probably healthy. It's good for you. Well, it was only by fluke that I noticed when I had a what I would call a much healthier breakfast. And hey, I didn't get that post breakfast crash, and also my chest is a little clearer. So that was, I gotta say, a major clue for me. And I was a little slow in the uptake. Probably took me a few months of like occasionally experimenting and reluctantly coming to the conclusion, I've got to eat healthier and give up my my morning sugar habit.
Well, isn't that amazing? Because I think that most people, and I would say I'm the same, is that, you know, it's your diet's really insidious. It's not like you eat something and then instantly you're like feeling terrible or vomiting or, you know, coughing up phlegm. It's kind of a slow process. And I think because you were so focused on lung function and charting, you know, literally where you're at objectively, it's amazing that you noticed a difference. And I think the other thing that maybe our listeners don't understand is that, So you probably know the stat. I mean, cystic fibrosis tends to be, it can be fatal, right?
Yeah, it is a fatal disease, and it's a little bit confusing because you talk about the average age, the time of death, and then a lot of people being diagnosed as adults with a sort of variation of CF, whereas the sort of mode, like the most frequent age, I think is still 24, 25. So
at the age of death.
Yeah, age of death. So, I mean, it's like there's mean and there's mode, and basically, long story short, it is a brutal and fatal disease that we're still trying to work hard for a cure for.
Okay, because I guess my question for you is, I feel like I'm going over the map here, but I just want to kind of go with this weave. But do you feel that because you ended up getting that transplant, which we'll talk about later, when you were 40, you know, and you're saying the average person with cystic fibrosis or CF dies when they're in their kind of like early to mid 20s. Do you feel that that your attention to things like diet was one of the factors that allowed you to live as long as you lived?
Absolutely. Like, if I'm honest, I would say the first and most important one was exercise and my determination and, you know, dedication to using exercise as a means of staying healthy. But a close second would be nutrition, and it has more emphasis than I really realized at the time, actually. And I'm very grateful that I discovered what I did and started paying attention.
That's amazing. I mean, I just, what an incredible, because I think most people would be like you. It's almost hard to link nutrition or even exercise. Sometimes you don't feel it right away, right? There's a bit of a lag there, isn't there? And so sometimes it's hard to kind of link them.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I've had the benefit of being involved in research studies where, you know, I started out and then started doing regular exercise, and I saw my VO2 max increase, and I saw, you know, the impact. But, you know, so exercise for sure, you know, for me was critically important. But, like, you know, if not equally so, like I said, a very close second is nutrition. And, you know, of course, a whole host of complementary things added to those. Like, you know, like you say, obviously I met you through chiropractic care, but whether it was chiropractic care, you know, massage, acupuncture, I literally sought every avenue to ensure I was as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And I think those factors altogether definitely contributed to me, you know, living longer prior to transplant than average.
That's what an amazing story. So we're gonna talk a little bit more about some of those factors that you just talked about, like the exercise and the determination, dedication, nutrition, and I want to get to that. But I guess the next thing I want to talk about was the was organ transplant, because I think it's just through sheer ignorance. I've always been kind of reluctant. Like I don't think I actually am signed up as an organ donor, because I didn't really get it. And I guess I was hoping you share with our listeners a little bit, like what it's meant for you. If you could talk about that.
Absolutely. No, I'm happy to discuss that, because, and I'll be honest too, when I had CF and I heard about people getting transplants, I was like, that's not for me. Like, you know, I knew there was a lot of challenges and complications for people post-transplant, and you know, I just didn't want to turn my head to that. It was kind of like denial.
Right.
But when I turned time where I was, my life was on the line, and I realized I had, you know, mere months to live, and the doctors were insistent, like, you know, it's basically you're going to die or you can get a transplant. Obviously, I became very attuned to that possibility and hope that I'd get it. So I was listed and had to be actually flown by air ambulance up to Toronto eventually, because I'd left it so late, basically, that the wait here in Vancouver, for Vancouver, basically, still in Victoria, was so long. It was like, at that point, a year and a half, that I wasn't going to make it. And Toronto had, at the time, had a shorter wait list. So I took an ambulance out there and was able, had to do a few tests first before they got listed, but I got listed and told that it would be around a 3-month wait, although it could be longer. And I was lucky enough to get the call the next day on Good Friday.
Wow.
2011. And it was literally, you know, a life-saving transplant. In the weeks and months prior to that, I was essentially living in the hospital. I was on oxygen 24/7. I had zero quality of life and was frequently, in fact, coughing up large amounts of blood and just hanging on by a thread. So that operation, that transplant, because some family or some person had, you know, had registered their wishes and registered as an organ donor and told the family, my life was saved. So that was a pivotal moment, of course, for me receiving
Holy
the gift
moly.
Of life through lungs. And it was also an educational process for me to learn about, you know, how that works. That person end up saving, I think, 3 or 4 lives because their heart, somebody else receives their heart, and you know, even your eyes can be transplanted. So it opened up a world that I wasn't really aware of, and I've become an advocate for organ donor registration simply because approximately 80% of British Columbians have indicated they want to be registered as an organ donor, yet only about 20% of us are actually registered. And it's exactly what you mentioned there. We're either ignorant about it, we don't know, we don't think about it, or it's kind of like cleaning your basement. You know, it's kind of thing where you kind of want it to new, but it's like, oh, I'll get around to it. Well, I just wanted to say before we move on to this, is it's super easy to register. It takes less than 5 minutes. If you think you may be registered already from your driver's license, that's probably not so. That they didn't transfer over when they changed the system. So you do need to register. It takes less than 5 minutes, and it's at transplant.bc.ca.
Wow. I mean, I think just for our listeners so they get the kind of gravity of what you're talking about, I mean, you went from, like, literally being on death's doorstep to, as I heard through the grapevine, that you were, like, riding 100 kilometers, like, shortly after. I mean, is that true?
Yeah. I mean, the recovery was a bit of a process, but it's night and day, you know, in terms of recovery. I celebrated, I think, exactly a year later. I rode 100 kilometers with a couple of friends, and actually started I did also the Tour de Victoria, which is 100 and, at the time 145 kilometers, and it was kind of fun. Actually, I'm proud to say that I went on to do some fundraising for Cystic Fibrosis Canada. They have a ride each year called the Gear Up for CF. At the time that I did the ride, and I've done it twice, it went from Vancouver to Banff, which is about 1,300 kilometers over 8 days. And we were able to raise. The ride itself has raised over the years over $300,000, so it's a great cause. So that just shows you like what is possible. I also I ran the 10K, the Times 10K a couple of times, and started even doing a little bit of bike racing in terms of road racing and mountain biking. So I went from death's door to being extremely physically active, and it all because somebody registered as an organ donor.
Wow, that's absolutely, just absolutely incredible. Okay, so let's move on to, so I guess for our listeners, some of the questions I have would be like, so you obviously had very diminished lung function, and yet you were still exercising. Like, what were you doing for activity, and where did you get the motivation, the determination to do it, and what were you doing?
Right. Well, another good question, because you are actually diminished. And I think a lot of us, when we get sick or we're down, we feel like, you know, I can't really go out. Well, I like to think back at that time and remind myself that I was down to 18% lung function. As I say, I was on oxygen, but the surgeons had pointed out that the better shape you're in prior to transplant, the more likelihood that you'll survive the rather difficult operation and that you'll do better coming out of it. So I would do anything I could to, you know, eventually it was simply just getting outside and walking and doing some light weight. But when I went to Toronto, they get everyone, even the sickest of people, they get them on that treadmill every single day, doing whatever they can for walking and also working out with light weight. And we're talking people, everyone in that room was on supplemental oxygen.
Wow.
So it's critical. And you extrapolate out from that. Those are people who are very sick, and they get, of course, benefit from doing this exercise. The healthier we are, actually, the greater the benefit we have. We take it for granted, the fact that we can move about easily. And suffice it to say that coming out of that, I recognize I need to work out at least 5 days a week, and nothing major. I mean, we're talking like just, you know, an easy bike ride followed by a little bit of calisthenics. It's varied over the years, my routine, and I haven't always actually been able to stick to it. But the primary basis is making sure that I'm doing at least a couple of days a week of weights. And I like to get outside every day, like 30 minutes outside, even if it's just walking, has been a critical part of sort of what I live like post-transplant.
That's amazing, and just the fact that there's measurable improvements like in lung function, and I hope for our listeners too that everyone understands like how critical, like, exercise is one of these things where if you want to be healthy, it's not even really an option. If you want to have optimal health, I should say, that's really cool.
I think it came out last year that if you a sedentary lifestyle, like basically not exercising regularly, is about equivalent to a pack a day smoking.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's
for lung function.
No, for overall health, like a sedentary lifestyle is now, the doctors are starting to talk about it like a risk factor, like, you know, how much you drink, how much you smoke, are you sedentary? Because if you're sedentary, you're at so much of a greater risk factor for all kinds of diseases.
Wow. It's, yeah, I know, and I was just at an amazing conference, and one of the speakers was talking about omega-3s, and there's another one of these things where it's essential, and if you don't get it, you know, you're literally going to have a compromised life, and there's so much evidence to suggest that, too. So, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so just, I want to touch a little bit on nutrition. So, I mean, obviously, the majority of people listening don't have CF, so something like Rumble would be more of like a meal replacement, right? Like kind of like a, is that kind of the idea with Rumble?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think when I think meal replacement, because I was sick for so long, spent so much time in hospitals, I tend to think of products, Boost and Ensure, just yucky things. They're associated, you know, through no fault of their own, but they're associated with old people or sick people or hospitals. And so I deliberately wanted to avoid that. We as a team, and I should point out also that the Rumble was very much a team effort. And although I had the impetus of the idea, it took the creation of a team, Dr. Kim McQueen, local naturopath, my friend Steve, my friend James McQueen was actually still the general manager of Rumble. After been a bit of a shakeup last year, we've been through some challenges, but that team helped create the product. And getting back to what you said about omega-3s and what people with CF need versus what the regular population needs, it turns out that my requirements for CF were very similar to what we all need. We all need more omega-3s.
We all need
the core inflammation. There's so many degenerative conditions that are contributed. One of the contributing factors is not sufficient omega-3s. So the basis of Rumble is the basis of what I think we all should look for in a diet, having the right balanced proportion of protein to carbohydrates, which for us, you know, in Rumble is about a 1-to-1 ratio, having sufficient fiber every day, and having those omega-3s. Like, there's over 2,500 milligrams of omega-3s in each Rumble, but not everyone has to have Rumble. In fact, it's only those people that don't have time. We would all advocate, the people behind Rumble and myself and you, I'm sure, would advocate that people eat a wholesome, balanced, real food as the basis for their things, and only rely on products like Rumble or bars when you're in a hurry. And that's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So that's great. I mean, what a terrific just nutritional aspects that we got from you there. So, and of course, I think we eat too much sugar, and there's no sugar in Rumble with sweetened with stevia. So that's amazing. I guess a couple questions here. In terms of lung function, if there's anyone out there listening that's got lung issues, whether it's like an asthma or a bronchitis, so what are some of the things that have an impact on lung function? We talked about exercise. We talked about body weight.
Yeah. Another one that is even overlooked, at least for me personally, I felt it was overlooked, is stress. When you're in a hurry or you're rushed or you're feeling stressed, your body creates more cortisol, more adrenaline, and the effect of that is actually inflammation in the body. And when you have a lung condition, you're doing actually subsequential, damage to your lungs by continuing to be in a sustained stressful state. And so I found that daily meditation has been a really important part of sort of just winding down. And you forget the word meditation if people don't like that. Just sitting quietly, each day in silence, without distraction, without the phone, without reading even. And just, eyes open, eyes closed, doesn't really matter. But that idea of having a bit of quiet time each day to lower stress levels has been another factor in my health.
Oh, that's amazing. And is that something you do every day, Paul?
It is, yeah. I try to do 20 minutes a day. When I started, it was actually, I'm an extremely active guy, and I must admit, I love to be distracted and kept busy, and I have an inquiring mind. So even 5 minutes is a bit of a stretch for me when I started. But I went from 5 minutes daily, and after I think about a month, I went to 11 minutes daily, which I did for about a year.
Yeah.
I like the number 11 for whatever reason. And now I'm up to 22, and it's something I look forward to. Rather than thinking, I should have to do that, it's more like, now I get to have a little bit of a break and feel into and tune in. It actually helps tune in sometimes through our bodies. We might notice something like that we haven't noticed previously. So tuning in is a part of health for me.
That's amazing. And I'll tell you something. One of the things I love about doing these podcasts is I get to ask people, these amazing people like you, these questions. And you'd be surprised how many people mention something like what you just said, like whether it's time breathing or it's a gratitude ritual or it's meditation, just that quiet time to kind of reflect. And isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's cool. That's a great thing to learn.
Well, listen, Paul. Hey, we're out of time. I mean, I just want to say thank you so much. That was what an incredible journey you're on, and thanks for sharing such terrific insight with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm honored to be a guest in your show. If anyone has any questions, they can always get a hold of me through Rumble. But I'm happy to talk about that. And please don't forget to register as an Ogre donor if you're giving it some thought.
I'm going to have to do that myself for sure. So anyway, to people listening, I hope you learned something amazing and there's some inspired information here that's going to transform your life and your health. To everyone out there, to Paul, thanks so much. And we look forward to you being with us again for the next episode of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfchiro.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.